Muted.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the BioArctic Q2 2018 report. Today, I am pleased to present CEO Gunilla Osswald and CFO Jan Mattsson. All participants will be in a listen-only mode. Speakers, please begin.
Welcome to BioArctic's audiocast. We will today present our interim report from January to June 2018. I will share the presentation with our CFO, Jan Mattsson. Next slide, please. This is our disclaimer. We take the next slide again, please. Start with a little bit of an introduction to BioArctic. BioArctic is a research-intensive biopharma company, and we focus on three areas where there's a huge unmet medical need: Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, and complete spinal cord injury. On the market today, there are only symptomatic treatments for Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, and we work on disease-modifying treatments in this area. Complete spinal cord injury patients, these patients have no treatment at all. If we can make a difference for any of these three patient groups, that would mean a lot for the patients. BioArctic was founded in 2003 by Professor Lars Lannfelt and Per Gjelfors, and we are located in Stockholm, Sweden. Today we are about 30 highly educated employees, and we work closely in our laboratories with another 20 consultants. We have two important strategic collaborations with Eisai in Alzheimer's disease and with AbbVie in Parkinson's disease. We will also show you today our portfolio, which is a combination of fully funded programs and innovative early programs that we are driving ourselves, but which has a huge future marketing potential. Next slide, please. I'll start with a little bit of an introduction to our two strategic partner collaborations. Eisai in Alzheimer's disease is a collaboration that we have had since 2005. This collaboration has been research collaboration, and we have two license agreements in place. The most advanced program is BAN2401 in Alzheimer's disease that Eisai are driving, and we'll talk more about that in this audiocast here today. They've also licensed a backup compound. So far, we have got 47 million euros in this collaboration, and the total aggregated value is up to 218 million euros, plus royalties on top of that if we come all the way to the market. We still own other indications for BAN2401 and the backup, such as, for example, Down syndrome with dementia is in our plans. We also have the right to sell on the Nordic market. If we then look at the AbbVie collaboration in Parkinson's disease, here, this is a large collaboration that is a lot of work for BioArctic, and this was initiated 2016. This encompass all our alpha-synuclein antibodies and all indications. It's BAN0805, which is the most advanced compound, but we also have follow-up compounds and diagnostic tools. So far, we have got $80 million up front, and AbbVie has the right to exercise the option for the full license at the time around the IND. The total aggregated value for these agreements is up to $755 million, and on top of that comes royalties. Both these are good examples of external validation of the high-quality work that we do at BioArctic. Next slide, please. This slide shows our portfolio, and as you can see, we have five programs in Alzheimer's disease. BAN2401 is the most advanced program, which Eisai has licensed, and Biogen came on board 2014, and they are sharing all the costs for the program in Alzheimer's disease. It's Eisai who is driving the program. We have then rights still to all other indications outside of Alzheimer's disease, and we are preparing for Down syndrome, for example. They have also licensed a backup compound that they are driving towards clinical development, our partner Eisai. Then we have a collaboration together with Eisai that is called AE1501, and here we had the press release in August when we signed an agreement for exclusive rights to antibodies to these innovative targets, which is different from BAN2401. We also have two internal programs, innovative early discovery programs, with two other innovative targets different from the other ones above. In Parkinson's disease, we have BAN0805, which is the most advanced program at late preclinical stage, preparing for going into clinical stage. We have two backup programs or follow-on and backup, PD1601 and 1602. When you work with disease-modifying treatments, which all of those are in Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, it's really important to be able to diagnose and identify the patients at an early stage and start treatment early. Therefore, we work on diagnostic tools, and biomarkers are also important to show the clinical effect on the underlying pathology. We work on biochemical biomarker based on our antibodies together with Gothenburg University and imaging biomarkers together with Uppsala University. And in our collaboration with Uppsala University, they have also discovered technology that can help the antibodies to pass the blood-brain barrier in a more efficient way. We call it the brain shuttle technology that we have accessed the patent to. This is really encouraging. It's early days, but has shown really promising results so far. And our third area is complete spinal cord injury. And here we have a combination of a medical device, a biodegradable device, and a growth factor, FGF1. And here we are in combined phase 1, phase 2 trial. Next slide, please. So a lot of attention to this audiocast will, of course, be devoted to BAN2401, where we have got positive phase 2b results during the summer period in July. So first of all, you know that there has been many previous failures, and a lot of those learnings has been incorporated into this program. It's really important to have the right target, and BAN2401, sorry, I need to have some water. BAN2401 targets the toxic protofibrils of A-beta selectively and not the monomers, and we think this is really important. Then it's important to also go to early stages of Alzheimer's disease. And in this trial, we target MCI due to AD, which is also called prodromal Alzheimer's disease, and mild Alzheimer's disease. Another really important learning from previously is that it's important to make sure that the patients really have Alzheimer pathology. And therefore, all the 856 patients have had to show a PET scan that you can see in the little picture down to the left. There is a PET scan of an Alzheimer brain. The red there is amyloid deposits in the brain. So all the patients have shown that they have Alzheimer pathology, either through a PET scan or through a CSF sample with a protein signature of Alzheimer's disease. Then this trial has a Bayesian adaptive randomization design that allowed us to explore 5 different doses and dosing regimens in an efficient way. And the study resulted in that most patients got the 2 highest doses, since the 2 highest doses showed most effect. So that is the benefit of using Bayesian adaptive randomization design. When you also go to this early population, it's important to have sensitive cognitive measurements. And ADCOMS is the primary parameter that we have used. But we have also included ADAS-COG and CDR sum of boxes as other efficacy markers. For disease-modifying treatments, it's really important also to look at biomarkers. And that is, of course, also included. And the key biomarker is amyloid PET. When you go to this early stage of patients, it's important to have a good safety tolerability profile. And we will look at the results from this trial on all those 3 aspects: efficacy, biomarkers, and the tolerability profile. You know that we presented results in December last year from the last interim analysis. And that was based on a Bayesian analysis on 12 months results with a high hurdle set for the ADCOMS as a primary endpoint. And the only thing we knew at that time point was that that high hurdle had not been met. And the study continued in a blinded fashion until completion with 18 months treatment. And it was also pre-specified and preset that at the end of the trial, there would be a traditional statistical analysis. What we also said was that a positive scenario would include an effect both on cognition and on biomarkers. So next slide, please. Now we come to the results. What has happened during this summer? So we had then the results coming in the first week of July. And this is then the first phase 2b study where we could demonstrate a disease-modifying effect on both cognition and biomarkers. And as I said, traditional statistical analysis was pre-specified and used for all these analyses. The results are very encouraging, and at 18 months, BAM2401 demonstrated dose-dependent, clinically meaningful, and statistically significant slowing of the clinical decline. And we also showed on the biomarker the reduction of amyloid beta accumulated in the brain together with a good tolerability profile. So we think this is a very promising result. Next slide, please. So I will now divide this into the three different parts. I will start with the efficacy. The study was designed to show an effect of 25% on the primary parameter, ADCOM. And this is a composite scale that consists of items from ADAS-COG, CDR Sum of Boxes, and MMSE. And here we showed a statistically significant slower decline of 30% with the top dose, 10 milligrams per kg, twice a month at 18 months. We showed a statistical significant effect, and normally if you have a p-value less than 0.05, you have a statistical significant effect. And you can see that we had p was 0.034. That means that it was statistically significant. What was really surprisingly was that we had an effect very early. We saw the effect already at 6 months, as well as at 12 months and at 18 months, statistical significant effect on the highest dose. This was much more than I had expected. We also had a good effect on ADAS-COG, which is a well-established cognition scale, the scale that was used for the symptomatic treatments who are registered today. And here we showed a statistically significant slower decline of 47%, also statistically significant on the top dose. CDR Sum of Boxes, which is a scale of cognition and function, here we showed a slower decline of 26%. And here the p-value was a little bit above p 0.05. So it was not statistically significant, but numerically it was higher. So I think all these results are really consistent, showed dose-dependent, clear effect on the efficacy. We go to the next slide and talk about the next important thing for a disease-modifying treatment is biomarkers. And the key biomarker is amyloid PET. And here you can look at it in a couple of different ways. The first way is that we saw that we could really reduce the amyloid beta aggregates in the brain in a dose-dependent and highly statistically significant manner. We could decrease, if you look at the centiloid scale, which is a way to combine or to compare amyloid PET from study to study and from tracer to tracer. Here we saw that we decreased with 70 units, from 74.5 at baseline to 5.5 at 18 months. So a clear reduction. And you see the p-value. This is highly statistically significant. When you use experienced readers, they look at amyloid PET and they classify then the patients into amyloid positive and amyloid negative. And here we could show in a dose-dependent, statistically significant improvement. And for the top dose, 81% of the patients converted from amyloid positive to amyloid negative. And this means that these patients could not go into a trial like this again because they had too little amyloid in the brain. Really impressive results. If we also look at biochemical biomarkers, A-beta increased in a dose-dependent, statistically significant manner, and total tau, which is a neurodegeneration marker, decreased for the top doses. The CSF part is only done in a small number of patients, and still we could show an effect. So these biomarker results are supporting a disease-modifying effect. At the bottom of the graph of the slide, I have included two pictures, and these are just an illustration of PET, how you can visualize the brain. And if you look at the picture to the left, it's a normal brain. If you look at the picture to the right, it's an Alzheimer brain. And the red and the amber is amyloid deposit. And the patients in our study then converted from a lot of red and amber to much more blue and green. So that is another way how you can see how they converted from amyloid positive to amyloid negative. If we then go to the next slide, please. And now we look at the third area, which is really important, the tolerability profile. And in this study, BAN2401 was well tolerated, with the most common treatment emergent reactions was infusion reactions, mostly mild to moderate, and ARIA, which is an imaging, you can say, an amyloid-related imaging abnormality, which is quite common for Alzheimer's disease treatments in development. And we could see that 90% of our cases were asymptomatic and only showed an effect on MRI and no symptoms combined with that. And that is a low level of patients with symptoms. Less than 10% had ARIA E at any dose. And if you look at the APOE4 carriers who are could be a little bit more sensitive to this side effect, less than 15% of the patients in the top dose had this side effect in this study. So all in all, I think that if we summarize these results, we have really good results on clinical efficacy. We have very strong results on biomarkers, and we have a good safety tolerability profile. So really impressive data from this phase 2B trial. So what's happening now then? So next slide, thank you. So what is happening now? Our partner Eisai, they are currently preparing for interactions with regulatory authorities regarding the future BAN2401 program. Also, a lot of further analysis and activities are ongoing with the trial, and a lot of sub-analysis, etc. That will be presented at the next Alzheimer Congress, which is CTAD in Barcelona at the end of October. We should also remember that the study has not been completed yet, so it will be completed later this year, because after the 18-month treatment, all the patients will also have a 3-month follow-up, and then the study will be concluded. So that will also happen later this year. Next slide, please. Now we switch to Parkinson's disease, and here BAN0805 is our most advanced program. Again, here, just like in Alzheimer's disease, we have a really strong scientific rationale. We have a strong link to the human genetics, where we can see that these patients have increased levels of protofibrils or oligomers of alpha-synuclein. We can also see these effects on pathology, on in brains of Parkinson's disease patients. They have increased levels of protofibrils. We have really encouraging preclinical proof of concept data. In Parkinson's mice models, who are overexpressing human alpha-synuclein, we can see that our antibody decreased those toxic species substantially. And the graph to the right is one that I'm really proud of, and this one shows that if you have a really aggressive animal model for Parkinson's model, if you give them placebo, which says PBS on the side, the dark blue line, they get motor symptoms and die fairly quickly. If they get our antibody, they get motor symptoms much later, and they live much longer. So in this study, we had a doubling of the lifespan for these mice. Really encouraging results, and this made AbbVie go into the huge collaboration together with us. And this is a really intensive collaboration. A lot of work is ongoing, and we are sticking absolutely according to plan. And we are preparing for a US IND to start clinical trials in the beginning of next year. Next slide, please. So now we come to our third area, complete spinal cord injury. Here the project is called SEO-806. And here we talk actually about the regenerative treatment. So on the picture to the left, you see the biodegradable device, which will help to guide nerves from white to gray matter. And that is important in this aspect. It can also then include and serve as a sustained release formulation for the growth factor FGF1, which helps to stimulate a central axon outgrowth and to decrease sclerosis. And during surgery, the patients also, or the surgeons will also take the serralis nerve from the leg of the patient and include those nerves into the device. And this will help to give an optimal regeneration environment. If you look at the three pictures down to the bottom right, you can see the preclinical proof of concept results in rats. And on the first graph, you see the green, which shows that we have really got nerve regeneration, because this has been cut and no nerve, and the green means that the nerve has regenerated. The middle graph shows motor evoked potential, so we can get that back with our treatment. And the graph to the right shows that we also can have a functional effect of the rats, that they start to use their rear legs with our treatment. Next slide, please. So on this graph, you see our CMO, who is using our robot that is used in rehabilitation. And the study is ongoing now in phase 1, phase 2 trial with ACA806. We have got orphan drug indication, both in the US and in EU. We have also got a really good EU grant from Horizon 2020 of 6.4 million euros, and that made it possible for us to take this program into clinical trials. We have also had information earlier this year that we have completed inclusion of the first of three panels. In total, it should be 27 patients in this trial. The first part is 9 patients, and all of those have now been included. They will then have 18 months of rehabilitation in this locomotive. And we have also opened up with a possibility for another 12-month extension period. We have also had a press release where we have shown that we have now all the approvals in place from ethics committees and regulatory authorities, both from Estonia and Norway, and now also Finland. So also a lot of really good progress in this program. Next slide, please. And this shows a little bit of the highlights. And as you can understand, we have had a really intensive period and summer period. And I can say that there's a lot of positive spirit at BioArctic. And we have also got good further collaborations being extended with Uppsala University with regard to our blood-brain barrier technology, where we have impressive data. So we have expanded that collaboration. And also had further patents being approved. So we really look forward to continue to drive our good portfolio forward in an efficient way. Next slide, please. So this is my last slide, when I just show you a little bit about recent and future anticipated news flow. And you can see in the Alzheimer's part, the BAN 2401 results, and that there will come more results. And of course, there will be more information that we know more about the future of BAN 2401. We have also then, which we said, got the rights to the new target, to have antibodies towards the new Alzheimer target from Eisai. And you can see early next year, we then plan to have BAN 0805, the IND, and to start clinical trials. And at that time, we also will know AbbVie's decision regarding the opt-in of the full license. In spinal cord injury, you can see there's a lot of green ticks and green boxes. And here the most important thing in the future will be the interim analysis after the first panel have been treated with 18 months rehabilitation. And there will be an interim analysis that either will say stop for futility or go. And then go, that means that we'll go to the European authorities and have a discussion about what is required for a conditional approval for this program. And then other important things is, for example, our collaboration with universities, where we have expanded collaboration on the BBB technology. So by that, I hand over to our CFO, Jan Mattsson.
Thank
Next
you.
Next slide, please.
And then to the numbers, and the comments are primarily made to single quarter numbers. To start with, I'd like to inform you that BioArctic has decided to change from income statement by function to income statement by nature of expense. And the main reason for this is that this is the way we follow the operation from the board and from management side. Net revenues increased from 32 million to 52 million, mainly due to an intensive period in the AbbVie research collaboration regarding the Parkinson program. And to explain our accounting policy just a little bit is that we recognize revenue from the upfront payment that we received from AbbVie in 2016 of 80 million US. We recognize revenue as we incur costs with a markup. Project expenses increased from 15.7 to 28.5, mainly due to activities related to the Parkinson program. And other expenses, or other operating expenses, amounted to 19.9, which was up 2.5 million from quarter of 2017. And the reason for this is that we now have a larger research organization and that we are now a listed company. So operating profit increased to 6.4 million from 2.5 in the previous quarter, in the previous year, sorry. Next slide, please. Cash amounted to 1 billion 41 million at the end of the second quarter. This was 622 in the corresponding quarter of last year. And the increase is, of course, related to the share issue in October 2017. Our operating cash flow or burn rate depends a lot of our activities in our development activities, and the cash flow amounted to minus 37 million in the quarter, which was up 10 from 27 during Q2 in 2017. Payment commitments that we have in we have a lot of them in foreign currency. We handle them by holding corresponding cash amounts in foreign currency, and this exposure may have an impact on earnings as currency rates fluctuate over time. And in Q4, there was only a minor effect in both 2018 and 2017, but for the full period, January-June, we had a plus effect of 10 million in 2018 versus a minus 4 effect in the previous year. A little more than 80% of our expenses are related to R&D. And all in all, we showed another quarter with positive net results that amounted to 5.1 million from 2.3 of last year. That was the numbers.
So next slide, please. And thank you so much for your attention. And we now welcome questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you have a question for the speakers, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. We have a first question from the line of Joseph Hedden from RX Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my questions. First of all, congrats on the BAN2401 data. Now that you have seen positive data, can you give us any color on the strategy with the other indications, the Down syndrome and TBI, and when we might see updates as to your further plans for development? And then just on the data that we can expect at CTAD, can you confirm at this time if there will be any subgroup analysis presented for the APOE4 patients and also the split between MCI and mild Alzheimer's patients? Thanks.
Thank you so much, Joseph. So the first question was that, of course, this positive phase 2B results of BAN2401 trigger us to continue to plan for other indications. And we will prioritize Down syndrome with dementia first, and that is what we now are working on preparing plans. And we'll come back to, when we have more clear plans with regard to that. Second question was with regard to CTAD and the presentation expectation for that. And ASI are working very intensely now on different kind of further analysis, including subgroup analysis of APOE4 carriers and non-carriers. And also, of course, on MCI versus mild, which is one part where the study was stratified, was based on mild versus MCI. So I would expect both of those to be presented at CTAD.
Okay, brilliant. And then just perhaps a follow-up to that last one. Are there any other sub-analyses that you think would be particularly interesting other than those two that we've just mentioned?
I think those two are the most important ones. And I think the study was designed to have at least 65% of MCI cases and D30, so I mean about 65%. So that was part of a stratification of the study. And then, of course, it's also important to see the since there are so many questions about the APOE4 carriers, even though the study and the analysis has already looked into covariates, where that has been used as a covariate in the analysis so far, in the MRM analysis.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank Thank you. At the moment, we do not have any further questions. But as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, it is 01 on your telephone keypad. That is 01 if you wish to ask any other questions. We have a follow-up question from the line of Joseph Hedden from Rx Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. I just thought I'd ask a follow-up on the project recently come out of the 2015 ICEYE collaboration. So when are there any patents related to the target so far, and when do you think you might be able to disclose what the target actually is?
Thank you, Joseph. Great question again. So here we are really happy that we got the agreement in place that we have the exclusive rights to antibodies for this target. And we are working together with Eisai in this program and are preparing patents, since this is a really novel, innovative finding, which we think is important. And when the patent has been in place and all of that is well established, or at least, submitted and a little bit further, then we will be able to disclose the target. But it's too early yet.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. At the moment, we do not have any further questions. Speakers, please continue.
So no more questions. So then we thank you so much for all your attention today. Thank you.